President Putin calls on the Russian defense industry to increase its weapons production to meet the needs of the army for the war in Ukraine. China expresses anger at a new U.S. law that boosts military assistance for Taiwan, saying it will damage peace and stability in the volatile region. Also ahead, airlines cancel thousands of flights in the U.S. as a massive winter storm disrupts airport operations. Welcome to World News. We're live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you very much for joining us. Our top story, Russia's president urges the country's defense industry to increase its production to meet the needs of forces fighting in Ukraine. Vladimir Putin has told the industry's chiefs to make sure that the army receives the military equipment in the shortest possible time. He made the remarks during a visit to a weapon manufacturing center. Putin also said the industry should improve the technical quality of the equipment. This comes as Western countries, especially the United States, have been supplying Ukraine with billions of dollars worth of advanced weapons since the beginning of the war in February. The U.S. House of Representatives, meanwhile, has approved a $45 billion aid package for Ukraine. The military and economic assistance is part of a $1.6 trillion government funding bill that has passed the Senate. It will now go to U.S. President Joe Biden to be signed into law. The U.S. has been Ukraine's main military sponsor in the war with Russia. It has already sent aid worth around $50 billion to Ukraine this year. Moscow has repeatedly warned that foreign military aid for Ukraine will only drag out the war and escalate the human suffering. The war in Ukraine has plunged Moscow-Washington ties to their lowest point in decades. Russia's ambassador to the U.S. has compared the state of the relations to an ice age, warning of the high risk of a clash.
Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky has visited Washington in a much-publicized visit to the U.S. This is the first foreign visit that Zelensky has made to the U.S. since the war began back in February. During a meeting at the White House, President Joe Biden pledged to give more military support to Ukraine, including a new missile system.
As I said, Mr. President, you don't have to worry. We are staying with Ukraine as long as Ukraine is there. Thank you all.
The U.S. pledged $1.85 billion in military aid for Ukraine, including a Patriot missile system. Ukrainian officials have continuously called on the U.S. to deliver that system. Biden said the U.S. and Ukraine would continue to project a, quote, united defense against Russia as the war drags on. And as expected, the visit has drawn an angry response from Russia. Moscow's envoy to the U.S., Anatoly Antonov, has denounced the visit as a, quote, Hollywood-style trip, accusing Washington of throwing all of its colossal resources, weapons, and intelligence capabilities at Kiev. The Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov has said that there had been no signs of readiness for peace talks during Zelensky's visit. He further noted that this was evidence that the U.S. was fighting a proxy war with Russia, quote, to the last Ukrainian. The Pentagon has disclosed that the U.S. has sent $20 billion worth of military aid to Ukraine in 2022. The recent $1.7 trillion federal spending bill includes $45 billion that's earmarked for Ukraine in 2023. Russia's Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu noted earlier that Kiev had already received more than $97 billion worth of weapons and ammunition, and that Russia was already fighting the entire West and NATO.
So the U.S. continues to supply Ukraine with arms and military equipment, despite growing calls from some Republican congressmen for more scrutiny over aid delivered to Kiev. And some polls also suggest the support for the U.S. backing of the war in Ukraine is waning.
As the West, spearheaded by the U.S., continues to pour more military and economic aid packages to Ukraine, there are now calls for more transparency. In the U.S., Republicans are calling for plans to exercise oversight powers to scrutinize tens of billions of dollars that the U.S. has spent. Republicans have been more skeptical than their Democratic counterparts in the Senate about funding Ukraine's defenses. Some Republicans have cited corruption in Ukraine, saying that there are concerns about the aid going to the country. Prior to the Ukrainian president's remarks, a few Republicans had already made public their opposition to the spending bill and further aid to Ukraine. We should be focused on trying to contain the war, not expand the war. And this sends the message that we are kind of okay with expanding the war. And I think we should be sending a different message, is what Warren Davidson, a Republican congressman, has said. Another Republican congressman, Matthew Gaetz, has criticized Zelensky, saying that American politicians who indulge his requests are unwilling to put Ukraine first.
You've got Americans here at home that are demanding accountability on our southwest border. You've got crime rampant. You've got historic inflation. You have a litany of issues that we all are paying for at the behest of this administration. And no one can tell us where this money is going. My heart breaks for the Ukrainians, absolutely. But every American deserves to know where every single dollar has gone.
This comes amid a declining support of Republican voters for more military aid to Ukraine. In the latest poll, 33% of Republicans agreed with prolonged support compared to 61% of Democrats and 46% of independents.
Turning to other news now, Russia's foreign minister has called for de-escalation in the Nagorno-Karabakh region. That's after the only link between the region and Armenia was blocked by a group of Azerbaijani activists. Lavrov says he hopes that the movement along the key road will be restored as soon as possible. He made the remarks following talks with his Azerbaijani counterparts in Moscow. The corridor, which is a key supply route for food, medicine and fuel, has been obstructed since last week by a group styling itself as environmental activists. Armenia says they are backed by the Azerbaijani government to create a humanitarian crisis in the mountainous enclave. Baku, however, accuses Russian peacekeepers of closing the road link. The Azerbaijan Republic regained control of the region after a 2021 war with Armenia. From nurses to teachers to railway employees, British workers in various sectors have been staging back-to-back walkouts since the summer. And now, air travellers in the country are warned of delays as passport control staff go on strike ahead of Christmas. The Public and Commercial Services Union says over 1,000 Border Force staff walked out of their jobs on Friday. This is the first day of their industrial action, which is due to last until the new year, as they are dissatisfied with their pay, demanding raises. According to the union, the government's 2% raise offer doesn't keep pace with a double-digit inflation in the country. The industrial unrest is expected to upend travel plans in the coming days. Britain's busiest airport, Heathrow, says passengers should be prepared for travel disruptions. The UK is reeling from strikes over pay and working conditions, and that's amid a cost of living crisis combined by fears of a recession.
2022 has been dominated by a cost of living crisis, and the figures are staggering. Inflation is running at a double-digit pace, the highest in 40 years, and far outpacing wage growth. While food prices have shot up almost 20%, and the cost of heating a typical home has jumped more than 150%. As temperatures plummet below zero and desperation rises, key sector worker unions have launched mass strike actions to pressure the government to force wage rises.
The people who are out here on strike today are the same people who not only worked through the pandemic, we worked for the people, we'd get their prescriptions, we'd get their milk and bread.
We just want a pay rise in line with the cost of living. At the moment, what we're getting is actually in terms of a pay cut. So it's not even in line with inflation. Everything's gone up. We're just like everybody else. We're all struggling.
This is not about pay. This is about our jobs.
The situation has become so dire in Britain that many families will have to choose whether to heat their homes or feed their families this Christmas.
It is very distressing. It's a situation which, in a way, unimaginable for a country which is supposed to be one of the richest countries in Europe and in the West. Why is it we have these extremes of poverty? Why are people, some people, forced to choose between heating and eating? I mean, there's something completely wrong about our system. We should be plugging and supporting and promoting equality and, not oppressing the poor. You know, there's something which says a lot about our political system, which is flawed.
The government has pinned much of the blame on economic recovery from the COVID era. However, critics say its ruling Conservative Party incompetence and leadership instability that has also left the economy in a dire state. A lesser discussed reason for a European-wide crisis is the ongoing Ukraine war. Britain has remained a staunch supporter of continued fighting, even upping its shipments of arms and financial support.
I think the first is ensuring that we deliver more military aid and that military aid evolves to meet the situation that we're now facing. And that means more air defence systems, it means artillery, it means armoured vehicles. For our part in the United Kingdom, we've pledged to match or exceed the £2.3 billion in aid that we provided this year, next year.
Low wages, higher fuel costs, inflation and major strike action have all marred 2022. Does the government have what it takes to resolve these many issues in 2023? Probably not. It's going to be a long road with most likely higher taxation, major cuts in public spending and renewed pressure on an already struggling British working class. Robert Carter, London.
Police have clashed with protesters in the French capital Paris after a deadly shooting with a suspected racist motive on a Kurdish centre. Protesters gathered near the site of the shooting, hurling stones at the police, and security forces fired tear gas and attempted to disperse the crowd. French President Emmanuel Macron called the shooting an odious attack. The Interior Minister has reinforced police protection of Kurdish community sites in Paris and elsewhere across the country. A 69-year-old has been arrested in connection with the shooting, which killed three people and injured three others. The suspect was known to authorities and had a history of racism and attacks on foreign nationals, especially the Kurds. China says it's resolutely opposed to a new US law that boosts military assistance for Taiwan. Beijing says the law contains provisions that cause serious damage to peace and stability in the Taiwan Strait. Taipei, however, has welcomed the legislation, which provided it with $10 billion in security aid. Taiwan says the U.S. move shows the importance Washington attaches to ties with the island and its security. Taiwan has been a source of tension between China and the U.S. for years now, and that's because the U.S. continues to supply arms to the island, which China considers its own territory. Beijing says Washington's assistance emboldens Taipei in its independence push. Japan's decision to boost its military spending has drawn strong rebukes from civic leaders in South Korea. Tokyo argues its move to build up its forces comes amid threats from North Korea and China. Tokyo's arms purchases also provide a boon for U.S. weapons producers. Frank Smith reports from Seoul.
Japan has slowly developed the scope and scale of its military forces since its defeat in World War II, despite its pacifist constitution. Prime Minister Fumio Kishida Friday announced a major shift in its post-war self-defense principle.
When considering strengthening our defense capabilities this time, we will assume various situations and consider whether the current capabilities of self-defense forces can deter threats to Japan based on the capabilities of our opponents and new ways of fighting.
Outside the Japanese embassy in Seoul, South Korea, activists protested against Japan's new military plans. Japan ruled over Korea for much of the first half of the 20th century. Civic leaders argue Japan's force buildup, to include various U.S. missiles and counter-strike strategy, can enable its military to again become offensive in nature.
The Japanese government's so-called counterattack capability actually involves preemptively striking enemy bases in North Korea, China, and Russia with missiles. As a result, Japan's principle of self-defense is completely broken, and the peace constitution, its minimum responsibility as a war criminal state, remained empty.
Japan suggests it's responding to increasing threats from North Korea and China. Over the next 5 years, Japan plans to double its military spending from 1% to 2% of GDP. And much of that, more than $300 billion, is earmarked to be spent in America's military-industrial complex. Japan's new military budget comes just as the U.S. increases its annual military spending to $858 billion. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Thousands of flights have been cancelled in the U.S. as a massive winter storm brings airport operations down to a crawl. Nearly 7,000 flights were cancelled on Friday and Thursday, leaving holiday travelers frustrated. The Federal Aviation Administration imposed ground stops and delays to de-ice a number of airport runways as a result of the storms. Some 4,000 U.S. flights were also delayed on Friday. Poor weather conditions have also disrupted railroad travel in the holiday season, forcing the cancellation of dozens of trains.
And that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour, but don't go away.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Aperture.
Iran is a country rich in culture, history, and art. The countless historical monuments scattered across the land are manifest proof of the glory of the ancient Persian civilization. And the development of modern-day Iran is evident in its major cities and metropolitan centers. But perhaps what's remained hidden from both foreign and domestic tourists are some of Iran's stunning natural treasures. I'm Daniel Arya. As the 18th largest country in the world, Iran offers a full gamut of climates and geographical attractions, from mountains and deserts to forests and caves. Iran's diverse and dramatic landscapes offer some truly awe-inspiring and unspoiled views to discover. In this week's program, we will follow Javad Gharayi, an Iranian nature explorer and documentary filmmaker, to the southern regions of Iran, where the hot sand dunes of the desert meet the turquoise and tranquil waters of the Sea of Oman. Stay with us.
Travel is the most important thing in life to me. The reason I travel so much to the unknown spots of my motherland is that I want to discover the hidden beauties of its environment and to meet its diverse ethnic groups. I believe that city dwellers, with all their knowledge, education, and modernity, must have a good relationship with the natural environment and with nature dwellers in order to live a richer, more peaceful life. A relationship like this is vital for our survival in the world we live in. It's early February. In this season, temperatures can plunge to minus 40 degrees in the towering Mount Damavand region. But I've come to a part of Iran where the temperature is as high as 20 degrees above, perfect for a good, long trip in the winter. I'm Javad Gharayi. I'm an Iran trotter, and this time I have traveled to the southernmost spot in my beloved country, Iran. Follow me to one of the most beautiful and pristine areas of my country, in the southern province of Sistan and Balochistan. To be exact, my destination is the southernmost area of the vast Balochistan region. In terms of culture and ethnic groups, Sistan and Balochistan province is divided into two parts: Sistan in the north and Balochistan in the south. During my many trips to the natural beauties of beloved Iran, I have come across multiple beautiful mountains and spent time traversing most of them, from freezing tall rocky mountains to forested highlands to those sitting on the hot and dry deserts of Iran. But this time, on one leg of my trip to Sistan and Balochistan province, I'm supposed to find mountains that are impossible to climb. The shape of these mountains, or should I say hills, is unique and beautiful. The locals and tourists who have visited this area have named these hills Martian Mountains, Many believe that the rocky formations in this part of Iran are very similar to those on the surface of planet Mars. Geological experts say these hills are sediments at the bottom of a sea that used to be here millions of years ago, were initially buried under millions of tons of soil following the change in the shape of the Earth's crust over the years, and were later unearthed as a result of climatic changes and monsoon rains that washed away the dirt, exposing the real face of these bizarre hills. These mountains are among the most beautiful in Iran, in my opinion. They are no less beautiful than Mount Damavand that's been registered as a national heritage. I hope the Martian mountains of Sistan and Balochistan province, of the Balochistan area in the Chabahar region to be exact, are also put on the national heritage list. The thrust of the Gulf of Oman oceanic crust under the southern area of Balochistan, in addition to wind and water erosions, are among the reasons behind the emergence of these beautiful elevations. They are made up of sedimentary rocks containing clay and lime. The beautiful furrows on their exterior have been carved out by centuries of erosion. The heights of Martian hills vary from one area to another. At their shortest, they stand at more than 5 meters tall, and at their highest, more than 100 meters. At first glance, these hills, referred to as badlands by geologists, may look like they are not very resistant, but you will change your mind once you inspect them up close, although they're not resistant enough against the rain and water of Balochistan. In the midst of these mountains is a plain where rainwater has accumulated over many years, creating a spectacular lagoon by the name of Lipar. Environmentally, Lipar, with its many and varied animal and plant species, is an important lagoon in the region. It is an important feature of the natural environment in Balochistan. The local population use water from the lagoon for their animals and in farming. I'm on my way to one of the most beautiful valleys in the Martian mountains. I've named it the Snail Valley. If you want to know why I picked that name for it, follow me. We walk for about an hour to get to the mouth of the valley. Flat waters set off by seasonal rains have created a beautiful and unspoiled valley and cave. This is the Nahadi Cave. It acts as the entrance to the Snail Valley. My good friend here, Shir Muhammad, was kind enough to come here from Berries to help me find this cave and walk through it to the valley. I'm sure we are in for a treat. Am I right? The valley, I mean the Snail Valley, is a very long and deep gorge that leads to the Terap Mountain. Terap is what the locals call that mountain. The reason I named this the Snail Valley is because this place is littered with shell fossils. You can see them everywhere in this mountain and in this valley. Beautiful shell fossils that have adorned this boulder and this whole area. All the exterior walls of these Martian or miniature mountains and inside the Snail Valley is covered with these shells that have turned into fossil. Another reason is that this valley looks exactly like a snail. It meanders through the mountain from beginning to end. In some places, it wraps around itself and sends you going around in circles before you can get to the other end of it. The Snail Valley is so curvy. It's one of the most beautiful gorges in the Balochistan region. And let's not forget that if a place has a local name attached to it, we should never try and put a new name on it. We must follow the tradition of the locals who have inherited that name from their forefathers, from their ancestors. So once again, we should use the same names as they do. The gorge is almost impassable in some parts, but I am so enchanted by its beauty, I've decided to move as far as humanly possible. Its many twists and turns and the millions of fossils on its walls have redoubled my resolve to move forward. We are around 10 kilometers away from the Sea of Oman. This is a very high altitude. Obviously, thousands, in other words, millions of years ago, this whole area had been under the Sea of Oman, part of what used to be the Tethys Ocean. These fossil shells date back to that time. These are millions of years old. Every time I step into valleys or Martian hills like these, I'm filled with utter joy. But I'd never take any of these back home with me or use them as ornaments. All I do is pick them up, snap photos of them, and put them back where I found them, to share all these beauties with posterity. We must protect these treasures. We are their guardians. We walk a long way and eventually arrive at a dead end. That's when we have to trace our way back. Fortunately, there are no construction operations going on anywhere close to the Martian mountains, and that adds to the beauty and magnificence of the area. After my visit to the Martian hills, I continue my journey to one of the most beautiful semi-traditional wharfs in Iran, the Berri's Fisherman's Wharf. It is operated by the inhabitants of Berri's village, perched on top of these escarpments. Before the village was relocated to the top of the coastal cliffs, it used to be somewhere on the sand beach. Today, the locals call it Old Berri's. The villagers moved from Old Berri's to New Berri's around 20 years ago. One of the most important reasons for their relocation was the strong winds in the area that would blow for 120 days in a row and dump sand and dust on the village. The second reason was the beautiful Berri's Wharf. The architecture used in the homes and other buildings in Balochistan has vividly been inspired by Indian and Pakistani architectural designs. They use different, beautiful, vibrant colors in their buildings. The old mosque here is located in the area where Old Berri's used to be. The rest of the village lies in ruins. They stripped the old buildings of their doors and windows and used them in their buildings in New Berri's. But they have left this mosque intact. Everything in this mosque is there, just as it has always been. That's because the Muslim population in Balochistan have utmost respect for their mosques and sacred buildings. They never demolish them. They abandon such buildings and let nature take its course. The main occupation of the people of Baris is fishing. The men of this land depend on the sea for their livelihood. Some strike out to the sea in small boats and throw their small nets in to catch fish. Others go out in wooden launches, which could be called the biggest of man-made contraptions. They go out to sea and spend months fishing. These large wooden motorboats are equipped with proper refrigerators and air conditioning for the crew. The fishermen here say they are not happy with their catches in recent years. They say marine life populations have shrunk drastically. The declining numbers of fish in seas and oceans has its cause in different and important reasons. The first reason behind the decrease in the numbers of marine life around the world is the boom in the human population on Earth. The growth in the human population has led to a larger demand for fish and in turn to overfishing by those in the fishing industry. Operations that are carried out via large ocean-going trawlers fitted with radars and other high-tech equipment. Ships that have nets running several kilometers and by means of radars can trap thousands of fish in every attempt in the depths of oceans. In almost every catch, these ships bring home fish weighing upwards of 300,000 kilos altogether. Industrial fishing and the overconsumption of marine life by humans leaves the fish no time to reproduce, pushing many species to the brink of extinction. In a recent survey, researchers at the University of British Columbia found that in half a century, human consumption has pushed down big fish populations by 90%, fish that are in high demand on the market. They have predicted that if serious action is not taken against overfishing by developed countries, all these species of fish will have gone extinct by 2050. Marine life populations are on the decline, which will have dire consequences for humans and the environment alike. The ecosystems of seas and oceans are intertwined with the lives of humans and the environment they live in. They're all very fragile. Iran accounts for only a small portion of the marine life caught around the world. The reasons being high prices, the small share the marine animals have of the Iranian diet, and the absence of advanced fishing vessels in the country. But European countries, the United States, Japan, and many other developed countries play an important role in the destruction of marine ecosystems. They have done more damage to the environment than any other country in the world. And this is a result of a boom in their populations, a change in consumption patterns, and the lifestyle of the people living in those countries. There are two other important reasons that have contributed to the dwindling numbers of marine animals: contamination and global warming. Baris is a very beautiful wharf. It was built at the foot of the Baris cliffs, offering a spectacular view. Launches and boats return here with their catch of the day to sell their prized sea creatures to the middleman. Beautiful this fellow is. The local fishermen here call it the kilkita in their local dialect. It's so colorful. Unfortunately, she too is still carrying her eggs. They get caught in the fisherman's net in this season. Most of those I've seen were ready to spawn. This is their time to reproduce, but they don't get the chance to do it. They are pulled out of the water along with the thousands of eggs that they are carrying in their abdomens. Poor thing is struggling to get out of my hand. Just look how beautiful it is. So colorful. One of the fishermen gave me this lobster and said I could have it, but I'm gonna let it go because it's carrying so many eggs. After my visit to Barry's Wharf, I set off on a walking journey along the shores of the Sea of Oman. Of course, I'll be walking on the cliffs all along. The view from atop the cliffs in Barry's is simply matchless. Fortunately, there aren't constructions of any kind up here. The area is an asset for Balochistan and indeed for Iran because of its pristineness. I hope to see the same unspoiled beauties and pristineness the next time I visit this part of my country and its beautiful landscape. I hope more and more tourists come to visit Balochistan. Nature travelers go to places that are pristine and untouched in order to immerse themselves in the peace and quiet that those places offer. Beautiful rocky cliffs that you see here are where Barry's begins. Those are the shores of Barry's, among the most beautiful of our beloved country, Iran. But the bluff along the shore is crumbling into the sea. The waves lap at the walls made up of millennia-old sediments that settled on the bottom of the Sea of Oman that used to cover this whole area. The bluff is capped by a 2-meter-high layer of rock, like the one I'm sitting on right now. It feels like reinforced mortar with all the shells and algae in it, fossils that have been here for thousands, or should I say millions of years. But the layers underneath are weak and brittle, allowing the waves to chip away at them one bit at a time. The green blocks or rocks that you see on the coast are in fact the top layer of the cliff. They used to be up where I am right now. It's going to take the waves some time to turn them into sand and dissolve them in the water. It's about 60 meters down to the foot of the cliff, and as you can see, a huge slice of the cliff has splintered from the rest, or should I say from Barry's territory, and will crash into the sea one of these days. So I better cross onto the other side because it's dangerous to stand here. I really don't want to go down with it. This gaping crack here is almost 10 meters deep, but it's very likely for it to be much deeper in other parts. It's too dark for me to see. This is a very dangerous spot.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم, everyone. This is IRB English Radio. Welcome to a new episode of For a Better Life. This is Asma, a student of English literature, and I am pretty much honored to have the chance of being with you once more. Wherever you are, I hope you are doing well. As always, we are going to have some moments of contemplation, after which we might get some hints and clues about our long journey into a better life. In his name shall start all the stories. Who am I, you ask? I am made from all the people I have encountered and all the things I have experienced. Inside, I hold the laughter of my friends, the arguments with my parents, the chattering of young children, and the warmth from kind strangers. Inside, there are stitchings from cracked hearts, bitter words from heated arguments, music that gets me through, and emotions I cannot convey. I am made from all these people and moments. That is who I am. Yes, who am I? How often do we ask this question from ourselves? And do you get the whole answer to this? Is there any way for me to know myself deeply, fully, and truly? What are my true qualities? And a lot more of these soul-searching, life-changing, and essential questions. The ones that captivated our attention from the day first when we started to develop an independent identity for ourselves. Sometimes the idea of searching in myself and finding my real picture and face turns to be the most difficult job I could ever get involved in. Why? Well, simply because it's not in no way an easy job to confess it to yourself. Well, I myself always wonder if there's still a lot more about me than I can't even imagine. Things and qualities I'm unaware of them, yet they hide somewhere in a corner of my soul, perhaps a dark corner of my soul. Now, it's very important for me to know each and every single one of them, because if they're good, I can improve them, and if they're bad, evil, and frightening, I have to deal with them. For there must remain no monster in the depth of the ocean of my soul. Thank you for sticking around. We were talking about our true selves and our clear and hidden qualities. I know what might pop up into your thoughts right now. You might suggest the many online and free psychological test sheets that are available everywhere for us, with the idea of revealing a lot of loops and hidden angles of our characteristics. And I do admit they work a great deal. Yet there are some other ways as well. Like, for example, looking at ourselves from a distance while you're interacting with others, or listening to other people's ideas about you and how they see you and they think of you, which is, of course, very interesting. And, of course, age and experience can tell a lot about who you really are. Why is it important to know myself? Well, clearly, if I know myself better, I could get to know the world and the creator of the world even better. So, as you can see, it is not an easy job to get to know yourself, to reveal the hidden parts about your qualities. But, well, it's a matter of fact that each and every single one of us knows a little bit about themselves. It is nice, you know, when I know that I'm a sympathetic person, when I know that I'm a kind person, when I know that I don't know some bad features as well, we must have, of course, as human beings. We're not all pitchy, perfect people who are just looking for the good in other people. No, sometimes it happens that I lie. Sometimes it happens that I do things that I shouldn't do. Sometimes it happens that I fell down and I do things that are unlike me, beneath me, whatever, you know? I'm just speaking of humanity and how different they could turn out to be in some occasions. But the whole thing that I'm trying to say is that to know yourself and to know your weaknesses and your strong points, to know your Achilles heel, is going to help you a lot in knowing the world and the people around you even better. And it actually is going to help you improve and develop a better person of yourself. And when you could do that, you are going to be closer to the person who Allah wants you to be. Because, you know, the goal of life is to be a good person as much as you can, not as much as the ideals that you have in your mind. While talking of this issue of knowing ourselves, which is the core of our existence, we have to know ourselves. And in our narrations, in our holy book, we have too much of quotes that tells us to go and search in ourselves and find the truth in ourselves. Well, aside from this, from talking about all these things, there is a perfect point that I have to mention, and it is about being a perfectionist. Sometimes you have so much of ideals in your thoughts and in your mind that even the goodness that you have inside yourself, you don't give it a chance to flourish because you think that you should do everything in a perfect manner. Then you stop doing the simple thing you could do even in a non-perfect manner, in a simple manner with other people. Then you lose all the good chances that you have had in your life for being a better person, which is going to be a loss, of course. So in order not to get into these situations, we can actually think properly like a real human being, believe that there is no such a perfect person with perfect abilities who has done no flaws or mistakes in our lives. No, we all are human beings. We have different qualities. Good qualities have to be developed. Bad qualities have to be dealt with, because if you leave them like that there, then chances in a time which is so late, they might surge up and then come to the surface and then destroy you and then turn you into a person that is totally worthless, weak, little being who actually is not deserved to be called a real human being. So that's why we have to take a perfect care of ourselves, of our features and qualities, know them better, know our weaknesses, and try to protect ourselves from the points that might let us fall down and get into miserable situations that would actually destroy us.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
And just to give the gist of it, we were talking about, do we know ourselves really? Now that I just opened up this box of worms, I would like you to have a research in yourself and then ask yourself, what are my true qualities and what are the things that I could improve in myself and what are the bad things that I could omit from my soul and I could just reject them, I don't know, cover them and whatever. I know that some psychological points say that you shouldn't fight with your bad parts because one day, after all, they're going to come up and they're going to face you. And then in that specific day, they are going to be so stronger than whatever you always thought of them. But I don't believe in this. I do believe that human beings are a perfect creation of Allah and they could do everything if they wish and if they have that a strong will to improve themselves. And yeah, that's it. I wish you perfect peachy life and thank you for staying with us until another session. I bid you farewell and may Allah shower you with His blessings and with His never-ending love. Thank you. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land He knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand He knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash He knows. And every word I share, He knows. Allah knows.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian Voice. www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.